This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. 6 weeks since Hurricane Irma, and people in Everglades City are still without temporary housing. Reporter Jessica Mazaros has been covering the small fishing town since the beginning, and in the second half of our show today, she will have the latest, along with the stories of some of the people biding their time until help arrives. But first, have you heard that Cape Coral is the fastest growing city in the nation? Or have you heard it's Lehigh? What about the Fort Myers metro area? The headlines are as confusing as figuring out the ways these companies come up with these rankings. We asked our reporter Quincy Walters to look into it for us, and he's here with us with at least a few answers. Quincy, thanks for being here.
No problem.
Also here to talk about population projections and how city planners actually use those figures is Don Scott. He's the executive director of the Lee County Metropolitan Planning Organization. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
We are talking about population projections and how cities planning future development use those numbers. You can join this conversation by giving us a call and asking our experts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Quincy, the idea to look into this came after a series of news releases came into our newsroom touting suburbs in our area as having huge growth rates, number one in the nation, et cetera. So, who are the various headline-grabbing studies coming from?
So it's coming from Wallet Hub, and there are also a few media outlets who have their own lists. Forbes has their list, and the difference seems to be which data they're using and also how they're sort of synthesizing that data.
So how does it change from company to company?
So, for instance, Wallet Hub used 15 qualifiers for theirs, and whereas Forbes used about six. So those are kind of how they vary. But they use info from the census data. They use info from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Bureau of Economic Analysis.
This is kind of like a crystal ball thing. And Wallet Hub, you said, you know, they use sort of confusing methodology and criteria to come up with those rankings. I mean, last year, Lehigh was named the fastest growing community in the United States by Wallet Hub. And then Fort Myers and Cape Coral have been ranked two of the fastest. How do they come up with their listicles of these fast growing cities?
So they use, like I said, 15 different qualifiers. So I talked to Jill Gonzalez of Wallet Hub, and she talked a little bit more about their metrics.
We look at population growth, working age population growth, college educated population growth. So really what the last 7 years look like instead of projections. We also look at job growth, the median household income growth, poverty rate decrease, number of businesses and startups, as well as the increase in venture capital, and things like building permit activity and foreclosure rate decreases.
So what's the purpose of these companies making these kinds of rankings?
So it depends on who you talk to. Jill Gonzalez of Wallet Hub says that that company is a resource for consumers and they want them to make the best economic decisions. However, Al Tompkins with the Poynter Institute, which is a journalism think tank in St. Pete, says companies like Wallet Hub do those rankings because it gives them sort of free advertisement. He says because the local news organizations will publish those results and credit them. And this recent Wallet Hub study, which came out earlier this month, was published in the news press and on NBC2's website. But I also spoke to someone from the University of Florida's Bureau of Economic and Business Research, Rich Doty, and he's a demographer. And he says these rankings are good for consumers. And he agrees with Al Tompkins from the Poynter Institute that they're really great clickbait. But he says that when cities need to know about development, they look for projections.
So it's kind of clickbait. They want to just get their name out there. Well, what's the benefit of Wallet Hub getting their name out there? Do they sell stuff?
So it's a personal finance website, and they do, I guess, financial planning and credit scores.
Okay, so they say, oh, well, here's our new ranking, and everybody wants to see that their city is number one, right? And then so they click through, and then the news organizations always have to credit where they got the data from,
right?
And so that's how they get their name in the news.
And it's not wrong data. It's they use, I guess, 7 years' worth of data from the Census Bureau and other places that collect data.
And you talked with Richard Doty too?
Yes, I talked to him. And he says So whereas Wallet Hub presents the average of 7 years' worth of data, UF's Bureau of Economic Business Research, they use models to estimate what a population will look like.
There are a lot of these outlets now that are doing these rankings, whether it's most livable city or best place to retire to or best tax code or most beautiful or most livable or, you know, and that's great clickbait. And people jump on those things.
And he says that, but city planners use their data because they need to know what the projections will be to accommodate transportation and infrastructure for a growing population.
And we have one of those authorities in the studio with us. That's Don Scott. He's with the Lee County Metropolitan Planning Organization. So knowing what's coming is critical to cities and counties. What kind of data do you rely on?
We do rely on the Bureau of Economic Business Research data that they provide. They have projections that essentially go out through horizon years. Our current long-range plan, for instance, goes out to 2040. Our next update will be 2045. And they provide like low, medium, and high ranges of what the projections are based on those years of data.
So it's kind of it's really far out there to 2040?
Yes.
And how do they crystal ball that? What kind of criteria do they use to figure that out?
They take a lot of what he was just talking about into account, economics. You'll see it go up and down depending if we go through an economic crisis. It might lower in the future. It depends on, housing sales, all the different things that go together, but also census data where we're at right now.
Is it easier or harder for Florida to make these types of projections? Because as an armchair demographer, I think about, the baby boomers going into retirement and people retiring in Florida. Are those the kinds of things that they take into account too?
Well, they look at permanent residents, but we always have to take into account what we have for visitors too when you start talking about it from the transportation side. But for the traffic model, for instance, we're using a projection of permanent population within that future year.
And one of the things that I found out today was Richard Doty from UF's Bureau of Economics and Business said that actually the fastest growing area in Florida is the Villages, which is that retirement community. And it straddles three counties. And he says that is the fastest growing area. But no doubt Southwest Florida is growing.
OK, so according to the data that I don't want to call the other data fake data, right? But the data that city planners actually use, that's the area that's growing.
Right.
Okay. Are we still growing down here?
Yes, we're growing. He agrees with that. Southwest Florida is growing. But the Villages, they're the fastest growing in the state.
Yeah. And then that presents other implications because if you're over three different counties, that takes a lot of cooperation infrastructure-wise to be able to plan for that type of an influx. So once you get the numbers and you know, Don, that you're going to have however many thousand more people, what happens next? Lee County, what do they do? Do they get together with the cities and start making those kinds of plans?
Yeah, it's a collaboration when you start talking about the long-range planning side of it because that is a population for the whole county but not necessarily for each of the different jurisdictions. So that's where you start collaborating of, okay, where do you think the growth is going to happen within your certain jurisdiction like Cape Coral and applying that to kind of parse that increases around the county.
So when you're looking at planning and you're talking about roads and bridges and keeping that traffic flowing correctly, how much do you take into account the seasonal situation?
Well, obviously from a seasonal thing, it's when you start talking about trying to plan for, whatever the 100th highest hour of the year that happens during season. So you're looking at seasonal data from traffic counts, things like that.
What's one of the biggest challenges that you think that our area faces when it comes to traffic patterns and growth?
Well, growth is definitely a part of that, but the other side of it is where people live versus where they work. Obviously, if you start looking at our patterns, people coming in from Cape Coral across the bridges into Fort Myers or Lehigh toward Fort Myers and south to Collier County, one of the things that's an issue out there is affordable housing, where people live versus where they work.
Yeah, we hear a lot about affordable housing, and then those arteries are definitely stressed as a result of people driving so far to get to and from work.
Right. And it's not just the people that go to work to a certain location, but it might be from service businesses, for instance, get into a air conditioning truck and then leave from a certain place to go to another place, and that impact of all that, those trips out there.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as also transferring goods and services, it's pretty much all on the roadways here.
Yes, and one of the things is that a lot more people now are using like Amazon, for instance, to get packages in. So obviously the freight is a big issue, and I think it'll become a bigger issue as we move forward.
And when you're doing any kind of planning when it comes to I-75, does that have anything to do with the county, or is that all state all the time?
Well, it's a state, but it obviously has something to do with both of our counties, for instance, because of the interaction between Collier and Lee. And there's right now, this next year, a project development environment study now is programmed for – it's in the tentative work program. We'll see if it gets in the final one. But for doing what does the interstate need to be beyond the current six lanes.
What does it look like in 2040 according to the projections that you've already seen?
Well, it's funny because if you look at it from a trend aspect, it's much greater than the transportation model. Just looking strictly at the increase in traffic volumes versus where the population is. And I think it's probably somewhere in between. But obviously there's different issues right now at certain interchanges that need to be addressed. And within 10 years, we'll be talking about something that needs to be done for, the main line side of it.
I kind of got lost in the beginning of what you said. You said that there are projections as far as population as opposed to traffic projections?
If you just look at traffic counts, yeah, and say, okay, let's look at the history of it and trend it out. The traffic counts are growing faster than the population in some of the areas too. Obviously, when the economic downturn, they dropped about 10%, but now we're back where some of it is not just from a just increase in population, but people are driving more VMT. And then obviously when you start talking about where someone lives and where they work, if it's longer trips, that's more traffic counts on the road.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, has there ever been an instance in which infrastructure has been planned for, which is going to account for a large number more people moving to an area, and then it never materialized?
We're usually ahead of that in the sense we've done some studies where we look in the past and say, okay, how did we compare to the population that was projected to happen in previous plans? And about out of four times we looked at it, two times it was fairly close to where it was projected, and two times it was higher than was projected. And we've heard this over the years of we're not going to keep growing at this level, and we still keep growing at that level. So that's part of that background. If you look at the counties overall, my probably best example for your question is that there was a time where looking at, say, for instance, Collier County, there was a lot of projections to grow south, Marco Island, all those areas to the south a lot faster. In reality, it was probably more growth between the two counties where they grew together. Because if you're here like 20 years ago on U.S. 41 between the two counties, there wasn't a whole lot in there.
Oh, there was nothing.
Yeah, and now there's a lot. So.
How long have you been doing what you're doing?
Since 1989.
Oh, so you've seen a lot of change.
Right.
How would you gauge, the way that population has changed over time? Was it ever slow and steady, or has it always just been boom after boom after boom?
Well, slow, maybe not so much steady, but slow population for us is fast population growth for a lot of other parts of the country, so.
Florida's really unique in that way.
And even if you look at it across the whole country, the South is growing faster than the North, that type of thing.
Yeah. Do you ever think that there's a possibility – sometimes you get on the road in the middle of season and maybe it's sort of wishful thinking, I guess. When you're in all that bumper-to-bumper traffic, you think people are not going to want to live here if it's like that. If the traffic's that bad during high season, people aren't going to want to come and visit. Do you think that's even a possibility that it could – get gridlocked to the point that it's no longer an attractive place for people to move?
Well, we say sometimes when you go and you want to go out to eat and it's 90 minutes to get in, you're going, who keeps coming back to visit? But it's an attractive place to come to, and that keeps it as an attractive place.
Yeah, well, you're not going to recreate these beaches or the
right.
Gulf Shores or anything like that anywhere else. So,
right.
Yeah. And then, as people continue to be able to have the disposable income to have a second home and come down here, it's going to continue to happen.
Yep.
Is there any possibility of creating any other north-south thoroughfare? Do you see Livingston Road becoming something? I think that's further south. It has a different name as you cross counties.
Well, Livingston, Imperial, yeah. Three Oaks. There's the Three Oaks extensions now programmed to extend that up to Daniels, from Alico to Daniels.
When's that going to happen? Do you know?
It's within the next – it's programmed on 5 years. I don't know the exact year, but for construction within the next 3 years, I think.
We actually had somebody asking that question. This is part of our curious Gulf Coast thing. You know, so we were asking people about development, and there was a specific question about when is that going to be extended up there. So you're saying within 5 years?
Yeah.
All right. So, well, that'll be interesting to see. So,
and if you, I mean, in, you know, on the eastern side, at one time there was a County Road 951 extension that was. It's not in our current long range plans, but obviously, as things get busier on the interstate, it keeps coming back up. The obvious one of the problem we have though is funding.
Oh, that's always the problem, isn't it? It's the perennial problem.
Right.
So, and then I wanted to ask another quick question. When you're planning out these roads and all this different transportation, how much does the environment come into play as far as where you're going to put these roads and keeping people on certain roads instead of keeping them, you know, going out into the smaller two-lane roads, which is where we see more of the, you know, Panther hits and things like that?
Well, the natural features and the environment have a big impact on where we can build something and where stuff was planned, you know, 10, 15 years ago that's not planned anymore. And that's somewhat even where County Road 951 extension comes in. The thing is that there, you know, people find a different way to go if they think it's more attractive to go that way. And even some of the things you're talking about, two lanes, there, what is that when you're talking in the future? Like State Road 82 now is going to be widened to 4 and 6 lanes. That was the two-lane road. Many others are planned to be widened too, because that's the easier thing is doing the existing corridor that's already disturbed versus doing a new corridor through undisturbed property.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Don Scott, the executive director of the Lee County Metropolitan Planning Organization. Thanks so much for making some sense out of all that for us.
You're welcome.
And also thanks, Quincy Walters, for helping try to make sense of all the different rankings and all those headlines. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we head back to Everglades City, where a month and a half after a 10 to 15-foot storm surge made a majority of the homes there uninhabitable, people are still waiting for temporary housing. We have that story coming up next. This is Gulf Coast Live.